This is the Crime Story Podcast with Carrie Antholis, where stories of crime and justice are told. On today's podcast, we continue the crime story serialization of Catherine Mader's Inside the Robe, a judge's candid tale of criminal justice in America, which best-selling author Michael Connelly called a perfect book and grossing and telling at the same time. In part 67, Judge Mader navigates her colleagues' sensitivities while editing a magazine for judges. Mader also explores the fine line judges must walk when talking to defendants about plea offers. You can find this excerpt in written form at crimestory.com.
July 15th. My jury convicted the apartment manager in 2 hours. I was shocked, as was my staff. The one person listening to the trial who felt the verdict would be guilty was my sweet female bailiff. Her impression, the defendant became friends with gang members to get their protection to have an easier time in his job. He erased the video to keep the peace at the apartment house, keep his job, and stay on good terms with the gangsters. While he may have also been scared, my bailiff believed that it was secondary to his friendship with the gang members. All 12 jurors agreed with her. Law-abiding jurors may have thought that the defendant's actions destroyed the murder case. I hope that's not what the jurors thought. The jurors never learned that the two murder suspects were in custody and both confessed. Whether their murder was solved or not had nothing to do with whether the defendant was guilty of destroying evidence. The next issue of the statewide judges magazine that I edit, The Bench, has a controversy over its upcoming cover. Another female judge and I interviewed senior female judges about their careers, whether they experienced discrimination at their jobs, and what enticed them to go to law school. We titled the article, Skirting Discrimination. When we were all young lawyers in the 1970s to 1980s, most judges didn't allow women attorneys to wear even conservative pantsuits. We all had to wear dresses and skirts, thus the title, Skirting. I was told that skirting discrimination was a title to which others might take offense. I didn't understand at first. Then I realized that if one removed the quotation mark around skirting, skirting discrimination might mean we were describing ways for someone to get around discrimination. Only someone not familiar with grammatical rules would come to that conclusion. I was also told that the word skirts was a derogatory term referring to women. Isn't the word suits used to describe men? I don't consider suits derogatory. The title has now been changed to Skirting Gender Discrimination. I want to respect the sensitivities of my colleagues, but ultra-sensitivity bothers me. At a recent judicial orientation class, new judges were told not to use the words flip charts, quote-unquote, as they may upset Filipinos. This is not a joke. During the early feminist era of the 1970s, I never hesitated to call out an even slightly sexist remark. I never let anything go. Sexist banter, at least in my workplace, is next to zero today. That made criticism of the cover story more startling. July 18th. After the apartment manager's conviction last week, I asked the defendant how much time he had spent in custody. He replied, about 30 days. No, the computer showed he had spent only 20 days in custody. That makes me wonder. Most people know precisely how many days they've spent in custody. For this defendant, it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Why did he exaggerate? This reminds me of his trial defense. Yes, he was probably scared, but 12 jurors quickly agreed that he was lying. When people exaggerate, there may not be immediate consequences. But when you're charged with a crime, and every aspect of your personality and actions are inspected in minute detail, an exaggeration can cost you. Another trial arrived this morning, estimated at 10 to 12 days. The defendant is charged with being an aider and abettor to a bank robbery. Two masked men grabbed a customer as a hostage as she entered the bank. The robbers then entered the bank with guns. The defendant in my court is not charged with being inside the bank. He was allegedly driving the getaway car, waiting for the robbers at a different location. One of the most damning pieces of evidence against the defendant is that he was recorded in a phone call from jail saying, "I wasn't even there. I wasn't even good for that robbery. All I did was provide a getaway car." Not good. In addition, the day after the robbery, the defendant spent $5,000 cash on a new car. $24,000 cash had been taken by the robbers. I explained the law of aiding and abetting to the defendant, who kept insisting on his trial. If a jury found that he assisted or encouraged the participants of the robbery, knowing of the purpose, he was guilty of robbery even if he wasn't present. Due to one customer held as a hostage and moved from outside the bank to inside by one of the robbers, this defendant could also be found guilty of kidnapping for robbery. That would subject him to life in prison. The prosecution has made an offer of 10 years in state prison to be served at 85%. That's 8.5 years in custody. The defendant is 37 and would be released when he is 46. A sure thing. The defendant is willing to take 8 years, but not 10. The swaggering defendant wants some control over his life and is going to risk a lifetime of freedom over 2 years in custody. His attorney, as well as other defense attorneys and judges, have been trying to get him to see the wisdom of accepting 10 years, but he obstinately refuses. I talked about the situation with my fellow judges at lunch today. One told me that he still thinks about a defendant whom he sentenced to 25 to life on a third strike for a robbery 10 years ago. He tried vehemently to get the defendant to accept the prosecution's offer of 10 years, but the defendant said no. He will most likely never be released. But as the judge said, "I did my best to outline the choices. The defendant made his own decision. I can sleep at night." As I earlier described, judges walk a tightrope when we try to talk to defendants about whether they should accept an offer. If we argue too strongly, a defendant may later claim that they were coerced by a judge who wouldn't accept no for an answer. Pointing out the fallacies in the defendant's logic, though, is fair game. July 19th. Driving to work this morning, I heard my name on the radio. I was listening to the podcast Reasonable Doubt with guest Christopher Darden, the prosecutor in the O.J. Simpson trial, Mark Garagos, the defense attorney in the Scott Peterson trial, and comedian Adam Carolla. They were discussing the volatile subject of prosecuting police officers for on-duty shootings in Los Angeles. One of the attorneys mentioned that when Kathy Mader was a prosecutor, she prosecuted an LAPD officer for killing a tow truck driver. I described portions of the two trials, the trial and the retrial, on January 15th of this diary. At that time, I was in a unit in the district attorney's office that prosecuted police officers and public officials. Difficult issues arise when prosecuting police officers. It's strange, with all the police shootings in the news, I forgot about my intimate experience involving the prosecution of a Caucasian police officer for killing an African-American tow truck driver. The incident took up 2 years of my life. It doesn't register often in my memory bank, perhaps because I felt unsatisfied with the result. The news today fully covers the difficulty of convicting police officers for shootings that happen on duty. Jurors want to support police officers. The defense always argues that it's not fair to judge police officers using hindsight for decisions that were made in a split second during the height of excitement and danger. We are asking a lot of police officers. We are also trusting them with serving and protecting the public with proper training.
That concludes part 67 of Inside the Robe by Catherine Mader. The audio was edited by Jody O'Keefe. For more storytelling news and narrative analysis in the world of crime and justice, head over to crimestory.com. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next Crime Story podcast.